Welcome, listener, to a deep dive into a stack of source material covering the automotive world, from market trends and regulations to recycling and cutting-edge tech.
It's a fascinating mix, yeah. Really paints a picture of an industry navigating some serious shifts. We've got insights on everything.
There's a lot going on.
Absolutely. From the numbers on new cars hitting the road, ambitious environmental targets, the complexities of global trade politics, all the way down to the nitty-gritty of what happens when a vehicle reaches the end of its life.
Right, like how parts are regenerated.
Exactly, how parts are regenerated, how batteries are managed, and even the surprising role of AI in the whole process.
It's a lot to unpack, but that's our mission today, right?
It is. We're going to pull out the key nuggets of knowledge from these sources and give you a clear handle on these interconnected topics.
Okay, let's jump in then. So let's kick things off with the raw numbers from the sources you brought us. What does the market snapshot look like right now? New vehicle registrations, say, in Poland and the EU.
Okay, looking at the data for 2024, we saw something interesting. Overall, new vehicle registrations in Poland, they had a pretty significant surge, up over 16%.
16%? Wow. How did that compare to the EU?
Well, that's the contrast.
Yeah.
The EU average saw much more modest growth, just under 1%. But the picture changes slightly in the first few months of 2025. Poland actually saw a small dip in registrations, down almost 2% from January to March.
Oh, okay. A reversal.
A slight one. Meanwhile, the EU continued its upward trend, showing growth around 3% overall and just over 2% for passenger cars in that January to April period.
That's a curious difference then, Poland's recent dip versus the broader EU trend. And what about electric vehicles specifically? I know the sources had a table on BEV share, battery electric vehicles.
Oh, yes. This is where you see huge variations across Europe. Some countries are, well, incredibly far ahead.
Like Norway.
Norway, exactly. A massive 92% BEV share in new passenger car registrations in early 2025. 92%. Denmark was also very high, almost 65%. The EU average for that same period, it sits around 15%.
15, okay. And where does Poland stack up in that comparison?
Poland is still quite a bit lower on that list, yeah. The BEV share in new passenger car registrations was just over 4% in the first few months of 2025.
Only 4%?
Well, it's an increase from previous years, but clearly, significantly below the EU average and miles behind those leading nations.
Right. So the overall market had a strong 2024, but EV adoption, still early days compared to much of the EU. The sources also touch on vehicles leaving the fleet in Poland, right? The deregistration number.
Yes, the deregistration data. It reveals a notable shift in 2024.
How so?
The share of vehicles formally deregistered because they were dismantled. It shot back up significantly, reaching over 91%.
91, that's high.
It's a big change from 2022 and 2023. Back then, a much larger percentage, over 13%, even over 22% in 2023, were simply transferred abroad before deregistration.
Ah, I see. So the insight here is...
It suggests more end-of-life vehicles are entering the formal domestic dismantling system in Poland now, rather than just being exported out.
Okay, moving from market numbers. The sources really hammered home the regulatory pressure, especially on environmental targets. Tell us about the EU's CO2 reduction goals. They sound ambitious.
They are definitely ambitious, yeah. Mm-hmm. For passenger cars and vans, the targets are set at a 15% reduction by 2025. That's compared to 2021 levels.
Okay, 15% soon.
Then steep 55% reduction by 2030. And then a full 100% reduction, basically zero emissions by 2035.
2035, wow. And heavy duty trucks and buses.
Similar trajectory, but on a slightly longer timeline. Still, 15% reduction by 2025, then 45% by 2030, 65% by 2035, 90% by 2040, and zero emissions targeted by 2050 for them.
Zero emissions within just over a decade for cars, longer for trucks. That's a massive challenge for the industry. What's the stick? What happens if manufacturers don't hit these targets?
It's a heavy stick. The penalty is 95.
95 euros.
Per gram of CO2 per kilometer over the target. And then that's multiplied by the total number of vehicles they sell.
Ouch. For a big manufacturer, that must be astronomical.
It absolutely is. Failing by even a few grams. Yeah, huge fines.
The source material also mentioned an action plan for the auto sector. Did that soften things at all? Give them any leeway?
It did introduce some flexibility, yes. But it didn't fundamentally change the targets. For instance, it kept the 2025 CO2 target for cars, but allowed manufacturers to meet it by averaging performance over 3 years, from 2025 through 2027.
Okay, a bit of averaging.
Right. But the plan explicitly said it would not include things like accelerating the CO2 targets further or increasing the ambition for AFA, or introducing general EU-wide purchase subsidies.
Yeah.
Or, interestingly, continuing work on patent packages.
You mentioned AFIR. Remind us what that is.
AFAR, Alternative Fuels Infrastructure Regulation. Basically, it sets mandatory targets for deploying charging and refueling stations across the EU.
Makes sense. Can't have the cars without the plugs.
Exactly.
Okay.
By 2030, the EU needs a huge network, 8.8 million charging points. That includes specific targets for high-power charging, like MCS for heavy-duty vehicles, and also hydrogen stations, mainly for trucks and buses, too. About 2,700 of those.
So, pushing for cleaner vehicles and the infrastructure they need. Got it. The sources listed a whole bunch of other regulations, too, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. It's quite the alphabet soup of regulations, as the source put it.
Yeah.
Really shows the sheer volume of rules hitting the sector.
Like what?
Well, things like bringing transport into the emissions trading system EPS2, carbon border adjustments CBAM, revamped end-of-life vehicle rules ELV, the upcoming Euro 7 emission standards.
Right.
Changes to vehicle weights and dimensions, new rules on selling goods, energy taxes, cybersecurity under NIS2, honestly, so much more at both EU and, you know, Polish national levels.
The key takeaway is just complexity. A lot of change.
A huge amount of regulatory change converging all at once.
Yeah. Okay, so with all this regulatory push, especially towards zero emissions, what support is actually available? Were there specific programs mentioned in Poland?
Yes. The sources highlighted some significant ones, both past and current. On the completed side, there was Moj Electric.
My electrician.
Right. That had a 960 million PLN budget, supported buying over 29,000 electric cars and vans.
Okay, quite a few vehicles.
And then a massive program for public transport, Zeleny Transport Public, or Green Public Transport. That was huge. 5.4 billion PLN, including KPO recovery funds.
And that supported?
Over 1,500 electric city buses and about 900 charging points. Plus, there was another 870 million PLN specifically for public charging and hydrogen infrastructure.
So significant investment already made. What's coming up, especially for the heavy duty side?
That seems to be the big focus now. Two large programs are launching. One offers 2 billion PLN just for buying zero emission heavy duty vehicles. The first call for applications actually opens very soon, May 30th, 2025.
2 billion just for the trucks, yeah. And the subsidies.
Pretty substantial. Up to 400,000 PLN for medium-duty N2 trucks and 750,000 PLN for the big N3 category. That could cover, you know, 30 to 60% of the cost.
That's significant help. And the other program?
Another 2 billion PLN, but this time dedicated to building the charging stations for heavy transport. The first intake for that, up to a billion PLN, actually started back in March 2025. Aiming to support around 550 public charging stations.
So serious money targeting both the vehicles and the infrastructure for heavy transport.
Exactly. A clear push to decarbonize that sector.
Now, beyond the regulations and funding, the sources didn't shy away from geopolitics, did they? The elephant in the room, Donald Trump's presidency, and potential trade issues were mentioned.
Right. This part of the source material really underscores how external politics can shape the industry's path. It noted key declarations from the start of Trump's term in January 2025.
Such as?
Things like ending the Green New Deal, withdrawing from the Paris Agreement, abandoning the previous goal of 50% EV share by 2030.
Big policy shifts.
Huge. Halting federal money for charging stations, ending EV subsidies, and pulling back California's waiver to set stricter standards, which effectively allowed them to ban combustion engines.
Right, the California waiver.
Yeah. And he also mentioned implementing balancing tariffs on trading partners.
And how's that tariff situation playing out now? Any actual trade conflicts mentioned?
Well, the sources point to potential U.S.-EU friction. The U.S. had previously put extra 20% tariffs on some EU goods, and the EU hit back with its own.
Right, I remember that.
Those were suspended for 90 days back in April 2025 for talks, but the sources indicate the European Commission was already prepping more potential tariffs in May if those negotiations failed. So it's tense.
Okay. And what about the EU and China? That relationship seems increasingly complex in the auto sector, too.
Oh, definitely. That's another major dynamic. The EU launched that anti-subsidy investigation into Chinese EVs late last year.
Right, in 2024.
And imposed provisional duties in May 2025, with the final decision expected by November.
And China's response?
They haven't just accepted it. They've initiated retaliatory moves. A WTO challenge. Anti-dumping tariffs on French brandy, an investigation into European pork and dairy.
Wow.
And even suggestions that European cars with big engines could be next. There are also reports China's advising its car makers to be careful investing in countries that back the EU tariffs and maybe favor those who didn't.
So it's becoming a real tit for tat.
It's a complex legal and political game. And you've got major companies, BYD, SAIC, Geely, even Tesla and BMW, challenging the EU tariffs in court. It's far from over.
Okay, let's pivot. Let's shift gears from new cars and global trade wars to the other end of the cycle. What happens when a car is done? The sources talked about regenerating parts and managing end-of-life vehicles, ELVs.
Right. This is a really critical piece for the circular economy. Regeneration or remanufacturing. The sources are clear. It's not just fixing something.
What is it then?
It's about restoring a used part to meet or maybe even exceed its original specifications. It's a much more involved process.
So you can't just regenerate anything. What makes a part suitable?
Several key things, according to the sources. First, the condition of the core part you start with. Is it too far gone? Second, the technical design, can it actually be rebuilt properly? Third, do you have the tech and the know-how?
Okay.
Fourth, the economics, is the core part valuable enough to make it worthwhile? And critically, the legal side, are you even allowed to reuse it? Safety regs and all that.
What kinds of parts typically are regenerated then? What do the sources list?
Quite a range, actually. Lots of engine bits, injectors, pumps, turbos, starters, alternators, heads, cams. Major drivetrain stuff, too, like gearboxes, torque converters, drive shafts.
Manual and automatic.
Both, yeah. Even some steering and suspension parts, racks, pumps, half shafts, some air suspension bits, and things like brake calipers, master cylinders.
It sounds like a lot of complex, valuable parts. But you mentioned legal constraints earlier, particularly for Poland. What's the deal there?
Yes, this is a crucial point the sources raised. Even if a part is technically perfect for regeneration, Polish law currently has a specific list of parts from old cars that you are simply not allowed to reuse.
Why not?
Mainly safety and environmental concerns. It includes critical safety system elements, specific brake parts, steering components, suspension bits, and exhaust system parts.
So, perfectly good regenerated part might be illegal to install in Poland. How does that compare elsewhere in Europe?
Well, the sources suggest the EU generally has a more favorable view, more supportive regulations for regeneration, you know, driven by the Circular Economy Action Plan's goals.
Right, reuse resources.
Exactly. Poland, though, faces these specific legal limits and lacks a clear regulated status for regenerated parts. Practices vary a lot, country by country. To expand what can be regenerated and reused legally in Poland, the sources say it needs legislative change, clear quality standards, better cooperation in the supply chain, education.
A whole system change, really.
Pretty much.
Okay, let's talk about the whole vehicle then. End-of-life vehicles, ELVs. How do you make sure they end up in the proper recycling system, the authorized treatment facilities, ATFs, and not just vanish into the gray market?
The sources highlighted several good practices from other countries aimed right at that problem. Financial incentives for the owner seem very effective.
Like cash for clunkers.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Denmark has a scrapping premium, about $295, paid out quickly. Norway has a clever deposit refund system. You pay a deposit, maybe €200 when you register the car, and get back a bit more, like $250, when you scrap it properly at an ATF.
Ah, that's smart. Encourages proper disposal.
Exactly. France links clean vehicle incentives to scrapping an old car. You might get up to €5,000 extra, depending on your income, if you scrap an old polluter. Money talks.
Definitely. What else works?
Strict government controls are key, requiring proof of rifling a certificate of destruction, or CLOD, to officially deregister the vehicle. Countries like Germany and the Netherlands use sophisticated electronic databases, linking registration, recycling, tax, insurance. Makes it hard for a car to just disappear.
Centralized data.
Yeah. Insurers often have to send total loss vehicles straight to ATFs in places like France, Netherlands, Sweden, and some countries restrict exporting heavily damaged cars unless they pass checks quickly.
What about the manufacturer's role? Extended producer responsibility, EPR.
EPR is crucial. It puts the onus on manufacturers and importers to manage ELVs. The sources gave examples. In France, manufacturers set up producer responsibility organizations, PROs. They manage the ATF network, provide financial support to meet recycling targets, which are high, 85% recycling, 95% recovery.
Okay.
In Norway, a PRO called Autoriter guarantees scrap prices, covers transport costs for ATFs, maybe funded by a small fee on new imports. Japan has owners pay a recycling fee up front to the manufacturer. The manufacturer then handles tricky wastes like CFCs, airbags, shredder residue, often using PROs. ATFs can charge the manufacturers for taking those specific items out.
So different models, but the producers pay. Now, a huge part of modern cars, especially EVs, is the battery. Big, complex batteries. Are they a cost headache for recyclers or a potential revenue stream?
That's a really important question right now. Yeah. The sources talked about different battery types, NMC, NCA, LFP.
Nickel manganese cobalt, Nickel, cobalt, aluminum, lithium, iron phosphate?
Right. The NMC and NCA types contain valuable metals, cobalt, nickel, lithium. Recovering those can actually be profitable.
Okay.
LFP batteries, though, lack cobalt and nickel. So, less valuable, less profitable to recycle with current methods. But info on the chemistry is getting easier to find VINs, labels, and soon, mandatory battery passports.
And there's new EU regulation on batteries, isn't there?
Yes, the EU battery regulation from 2023. It's a potential game changer. From August 2025, battery passports and recycling certificates are mandatory.
Mandatory.
And crucially, it puts the responsibility and the cost of collecting, transporting, and recycling batteries onto the producers and importers.
Ah, the EPR principle again.
Exactly. Plus, it sets really high recovery targets for those valuable metals. 90% for lithium, cobalt, nickel by 2027. And looking ahead, new batteries will have to contain minimum amounts of recycled content initially, 16% cobalt, 6% lithium, 6% nickel.
So the regulation's basically forcing the issue batteries have to be treated as a resource.
Precisely. The sources stress that making this work needs cooperation, knowledge, technology. They mentioned a company, Aneris BNR, as an example, offering services for collection, classification, safe transport, certified recycling, high recovery rates.
Turning compliance into a business opportunity.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
Or at least a necessary service. The takeaway is, even though EVs have been around a while, we're really just starting to build the proper large-scale systems needed to handle their batteries effectively at end of life.
Okay, let's completely shift gears. Technology. The sources explored how artificial intelligence, AI, could support automotive dismantling. Seems like a leap.
Maybe not as much as you'd think. AI, as the sources describe it, is about systems learning from data, processing things like images or language, making decisions, solving problems.
Machine learning, computer vision.
Exactly, those kinds of things. And why now for dismantling?
Yeah, why now?
Well, the sources point to a few converging factors. Much more computing power available, access to huge data sets, think millions of car photos. Better cloud tech, easier ways to actually train AI models, and lower costs. It's just becoming more accessible, more practical.
Okay, so what can it actually do in a dismantling yard? What are the applications?
A big one is image processing. AI can look at photos and automatically categorize vehicles, identify specific areas on the car, read VINs, license plates, even mileage from a dashboard photo.
Reads the odometer.
Yeah. It can also detect damage, like dents or scratches, using visualization and perform image segmentation, basically isolating specific parts within a picture.
Did the sources give examples?
They did. An application called Policy Check was mentioned. It uses AI to verify photos. Customers submit checking the angle, the plate number, VIN, mileage, damages, giving real-time feedback. There's also a back-end system for human experts to quickly review any flags the AI raises.
So verification and quality control.
All right. And another project, FO2, uses image fingerprinting. It compares new photos to a massive database of millions of historical images and damages to find similar cases. Think consistency checks, fraud detection.
That sounds incredibly powerful. So AI is like a digital assistant for assessment and verification.
Precisely. And the sources suggested broader uses too, helping decide which vehicles to acquire based on quick analysis, improving customer service automation, aiding management decisions with data analysis, supporting logistics.
It really sounds like AI is moving from sci-fi to a practical tool for this industry.
Yeah, the sources basically wrap up that section by asking, can businesses in this sector really afford not to embrace AI, implying it's becoming pretty essential?
Okay, finally, let's tackle a really complex but critical topic from the sources. The rules around moving vehicles and parts across borders. Specifically, when is something considered waste? Because that triggers a whole different set of rules.
Absolutely. This is governed by layers of rules. Globally, you have the Basel Convention on Hazardous Waste Movement. Within the EU, it's Regulation 1013/2006 on waste shipments. Though a new one, 2024-1157, takes over in May 2026. And then in Poland, the National Law on International Waste Shipments adds details and assigns responsibility.
And who's the main authority overseeing this in Poland?
That's the Chief Inspectorate of Environmental Protection, GIOSZ. They handle the permits, the procedures, dealing with the illegal shipments. They're the gatekeepers. And Poland has specific national bans too. No importing waste just for disposal, no mixed municipal waste, unless it's properly sorted for recycling.
Okay, layers of rules, GIOSZ in charge. How does it work if you want to move something, say, parts across a border? What are the procedures?
Two main paths to describe. For some waste, often green-listed stuff moving within the EU or OECD, there's a simpler information process using an Annex 7 document.
Mm-hmm.
But for hazardous waste, waste for disposal, unclassified stuff, or even some green list waste going outside the OECD.
Mm-hmm.
You need the full prior written notification and consent procedure. That means getting a permit, involving authorities in every country it passes through. Much stricter.
Very technical. But the absolute crux of it seems to be, is it waste in the first place? How do they decide? What are the criteria? Because that classification dictates everything.
Exactly. That's the million-dollar question. The definition of waste is broad. Anything the holder discards, intends to discard, or is obliged to discard. The sources outline the detailed criteria GEOS Use uses based on EU guidance. And they stress each case is assessed individually.
Okay, break it down for us. What factors do they look at?
First, the legal status. Is there a document saying it's end of life? Did it come from a waste collection system? Is it explicitly heading for dismantling? Is it an ELV under the regs? Does it even have proof of ownership? Any of those point towards waste.
Makes sense. What else? Second, technical condition, especially for whole vehicles. If it needs more than minor repairs, if it's badly damaged, crash, fire, cut in half its waste. The sources clarify minor cracked windshield, broken light, worn tires, missing battery. If only that stuff is wrong and it otherwise runs, it might not be waste based just on condition, but major damage, definitely waste.
Okay, condition matters. What about parts?
Third, for parts, it's both their condition and how they're handled and loaded. Are they corroded, incomplete, dirty, oily, badly worn? Can they be reused directly without processing? If yes to those problems, likely waste. But critically, how are they loaded? Piled haphazardly like scrap. Unsorted. Mixed up. That screams waste. The sources even cite court rulings confirming this. Lack of securing parts against damage or leaks also points to waste.
So how it's packed is evidence of intent.
Pretty much. If they're treated like valuable products, sorted, cleaned, protected, that supports them not being waste.
Interesting. What else? Fourth, value versus condition. Are they sold by individual part number and price, or just by weight at scrap metal prices? If it's the latter, likely waste.
The economics tell a story.
They do. And finally, fifth, some parts are just legally defined as waste in Poland, regardless of condition, because reusing them is considered a risk to safety or environment. These are listed in specific laws. They must be managed as waste. This includes hazardous parts and things like cut body sections, half cars, quarter cars that can't just be bolted on. They need processing, so they're waste when shipped like that.
Wow. So it's a multi-factor test. Legal status, physical state, handling, value, and specific legal prohibitions, all assessed case by case. The sources also had some data on dismantling certificates GEOS receives, didn't they, for foreign cars dismantled in Poland?
Yes. ATFs in Poland have to send GEOS a certificate within 7 days for any non-Polish registered vehicle they dismantle. The data showed a steady increase under 1,000 in 2022, over 1,700 in 2024, and Q1 2025 was on track too. The charts also showed where these ELVs mainly come from and where in Poland they end up being dismantled. It gives you a picture of that cross-border flow into the formal system.
We have covered so much ground today. Wow. From those contrasting market numbers and the really aggressive push for zero emission vehicles through the global trade complexities and Poland's specific situation, all the way to the end of life stuff.
Yeah, managing waste, regenerating parts, the new battery rules, even how AI is starting to play a role in dismantling.
It really shows the automotive world, especially, you know, the aftermarket, the recycling side. It's in a period of intense interconnected change.
Absolutely. These sources highlight both the big challenges navigating this maze of regulations, adapting to geopolitics, building completely new systems for things like battery recycling, but also the opportunities. Leveraging AI for efficiency or, you know, being forced by rules like the battery regulation to actually turn end-of-life stuff into valuable resources.
So what does taking this deep dive mean for you listening right now?
Well, it really means staying informed is more critical than ever, doesn't it? Understanding these parallel trends. The EV push needs infrastructure. Resource pressure demands circularity for cars and parts. Geopolitics hits supply chains and markets. AI changes operations.
It's all connected.
It's all connected. Grasping how these pieces fit together is essential for anyone involved in, or even just curious about, the future of transport and how we manage resources.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for bringing us all this material to explore today. It's been fascinating.
Our pleasure. Good discussion.
And here's a final thought for you, the listener, to perhaps mull over. As vehicles become increasingly sophisticated, packed with new materials, complex electronics, and rapidly evolving battery tech, how quickly can the actual skills, the knowledge, the physical infrastructure for repair, for regeneration, for comprehensive recycling, how quickly can all that adapt to keep pace with what's actually hitting the market now and will be reaching end of life very soon?